It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We unpack weather messaging and the influence of local meteorologists as a trusted source on climate change. The climate crisis is a divisive issue. Could meteorologists make the crisis less distant and abstract, more localized? The Bureau of Labor Statistics, by the way, says we watch about 3 hours of TV a day. Call in with your questions about weather reports and climate change, 800-642-1234. Barbara Mays Bousted is a meteorologist and instructor for the National Weather Service. Barbara, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me back, Kate. It's good to be here.
And we have Kristen Kershane is a meteorologist at WTMJ-TV in Milwaukee. Kristen, welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning to you. And Bob Lindmeyer rounds us out, senior chief meteorologist at WKOW-TV in Madison. Bob, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning, Bob. Let's start with you. As a member of the American Meteorological Society's Station Scientist Committee, encouraging people in your field to educate on issues like climate change and being, as you have been, a meteorologist for more than 40 years, when did you start to see the effects of climate change in the weather?
For me, in my 40-year career, it was about 20 years ago when I started to see more unusual weather events happen than I had in my previous 20 years on the job. But more than my own personal observations, it was what I was seeing from the climate scientists, from the climate science community. The research they were putting out was getting more and more alarming. And I was reading that and becoming alarmed myself. However, I was seeing a disconnect in that I was not seeing the same amount of alarm in the general public. So that's when I decided to really start to emphasize myself, the peer-reviewed research of climate scientists, and relaying that to the general public through my role as a broadcast meteorologist.
How did you connect those two? Was it natural to you to start talking about climate change in your weather reporting, or were you hesitant at first? What was that like?
I was hesitant for a number of reasons. For broadcast meteorologists in general, the barriers that they face in relaying climate science information is a number of factors. Number one, just a lack of time to prepare material. You're very busy throughout your day, just concentrating on presenting the weather, the short term, the next 7 days. There's just a lack of presentation time in our broadcasts. Usually there's 2 to 3 minutes of time to just talk about the weather. And you usually have just enough time to do that. So adding a segment on climate change makes it challenging. For many of us, you just don't know enough about climate science. Again, our specialty is short-term weather, and to be able to talk about climate science, you really have to get into it to be able to comfortably pass it on. Just being comfortable about broadcasting, talking about climate change. Another one is resistance from management. Some of the upper managements of TV stations just discourage it. And I kind of assumed that at WKOW-TV. As it turns out, it was a wrong assumption for me when I approached management about talking about it. I was pleasantly surprised to say, go for it, pass on that information. There's a fear that the viewers will complain, that you're going to get pushback. And literally a fear that a broadcast meteorologist will lose your job because we're in a very competitive market. So for all those reasons, it was challenging. And for me, it was not natural to talk about climate change. The first time I talked about climate change on air, I was very nervous. It was like my first weather report that I had ever done. That's how much out of my comfort zone I was, at least to start out.
Barbara, as you hear all of those things that Bob has ticked off there, what comes up for you as an author of the Northern Plains chapter of the National Climate Assessment as you try to figure out how to teach the next generation of meteorologists?
As Bob was talking, I was nodding my head along because so many of the things he stated are things I have felt, or I know that my colleagues in the National Weather Service have felt, everything from the fear of pushback to fear of management resistance, whether there actually is any or not, to trying to understand more about climate so that we feel better equipped to talk about it. We are in slightly different sectors of providing weather information, but it really turns out that we have a lot of the same challenges and a lot of the same opportunities as well, because like Bob and others who are on TV, those in the Weather Service are trusted voices in their communities too. And this is an opportunity to help those in our communities understand climate change and how it's impacting us here locally.
Kristen, how do you feel the training you received in college to talk about climate science in your career as a meteorologist?
So when I think back about my college experience, one, I had the benefit of going to journalism school first and then going back to school for meteorology. So I have some background in reporting and journalism, and I think that has helped me a lot throughout my career in presenting information and telling stories. But as far as when I was in school for meteorology, climate change wasn't a big topic. It wasn't something that we talked about a lot. There were no specific classes set aside that talked about climate change. Most of what we learned about was focused on weather and weather prediction, which makes sense. I went to school to be a meteorologist, not a climatologist, but there just wasn't a lot of information given, I think, when I went to school. And that may have changed since then, I'm not sure. But I think a lot of what I have learned and the experience that I've had was having to figure it out on my own. And that there are very good, trusted sources out there. There are also some untrustworthy sources, and there is misinformation on the internet. I think we all know that. And so for me, it was kind of a journey to find out what do I think and what can I look at? What data can I find? How can this be proven? What ways can we see that this is actually happening? And so that path for me was kind of up and down for a while. I think for a while early in my career, I didn't have a good mentor or a good person that I worked under to really kind of show me and talk to me about that. So it was kind of up to me. And for a while, I was led astray in some ways. You know, there are different arguments against climate change. And so I had looked into those. And then now, you know, the science is clear. You know, it's undeniable that we're seeing the climate change, that we're seeing the earth warming, and that there's just a lot of really good information out there and a lot of good sources to look to now. And so I think that for me, it's just really been a learning experience over a lot of years.
Talking with three meteorologists, Kristen Kershane there at WTMJ-TV in Milwaukee. We have Bob Lindmeyer at WKOW-TV in Madison, and Barbara Mays Bousted with the National Weather Service as we look at weather and climate change. You can join in 800-642-1234. Barbara, a decade ago, a Yale study found weathercaster-delivered climate change education can have positive effects on TV viewers. Large segments of the public trust, as you mentioned, weathercasters as a source of information. How should they tackle this issue considering this platform?
There's a real opportunity here for our broad community of meteorologists who are on TV and in other media to bring out some of the climate science that's there. And I know that there are resources available. One excellent example is Climate Central, where they provide information to broadcasters, graphics and information, updates on the state of the science to take some of that workload off. Because as Bob mentioned earlier, that on-station meteorologists often don't have a ton of time to put these things together on their own. So what it comes down to is using the resources that are available, finding and using those resources, and also to take advantage of post-college training that's available in climate to add comfort to our ability to talk about it. And that includes what we produce at the Weather Service and others through the American Meteorological Society, for instance.
I wonder, Barbara, do you think meteorology helped you better understand climate change? Because climate scientists, climatology, you're also studying the drivers of climate change, like the modern climate to past climate records. Do you think meteorology helped you to get a handle on this?
I think it, in fact, I'm quite confident that understanding meteorology helped me understand climatology, and also understanding climatology helped me better understand meteorology, because every weather event that happens on the background of the climate state. So as you gain understanding about that climate state, how it has changed in the past, how it may change in the future, you also can connect that more strongly to the weather impacts. These are the things that people are going to walk away feeling and knowing as our climate changes around us. We don't really remember a couple of degrees of average temperature change, but we remember the summer it got so hot that a lot of people we know got sick. So connecting the climate around us to these weather events is, I think, a strength that meteorologists offer to help communicate about climate.
The National Weather Service's Barbara Mays Bousted, meteorologist, instructor, and applied climatologist based in Nebraska. We also have Bob Lindmeyer and Kristen Kershane, our meteorologists at stations in Madison and Milwaukee. Join the conversation by calling with your questions about climate change and weather reporting and presentation, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Climate scientists stress it's hard to overstate the profound risk climate change poses to the world. Could local TV meteorologists be trusted messengers in relaying how the climate crisis hits home? We look at the role of meteorologists as an authority on global warming with a panel of them. Call in with your questions about climate change and weather reporting, 800-642-1234. We have Barbara Mays Bousted, National Weather Service meteorologist instructor. Kristen Kershane is a meteorologist at WTMJ-TV. And Bob Lindmeyer, meteorologist at WKOW-TV in Madison. Bob, as you said before, you make it a priority to address the climate crisis and to address climate change in your reports. How do you do it?
I rely heavily, and this was mentioned earlier, on Climate Central. Climate Central puts out a suite of graphics for that pass on climate change information, and it's highly localized. You can get for your market climate change information. For instance, I know for Madison that in the last 50 years, the average temperature for annual temperature has gone up 3.1 degrees. And for each of the markets in Milwaukee, Green Bay, Wausau, there are specific numbers that can be passed on to viewers. But not only is it broken up into markets, but they put out these very nice graphics that illustrate that. So I use Climate Central heavily on the air to relay information. They're very topical. When something's happened in the weather that's very unusual, they'll put out a set of graphics that you can rely on. So it really helps with that issue of preparation. You just don't have time to generate graphics or the information yourself. Through Climate Central, we know it's peer-reviewed information, and it's put together in graphics that are really, really eye-appealing. So I rely heavily on that organization.
And certainly visuals are super helpful in understanding what is happening, and we can certainly see it in that space of meteorology. Kristen, how about you? Did you on your journey, as you talked about, because viewers are going on a similar journey, did you face blowback or pushback when you are trying to bring climate change information into the conversation, into your reporting?
For me, I haven't had a ton of pushback when reporting on climate. I think a lot of the pushback, at least that I see, comes through social media. And I think that we all know that that's an easy place for people to push back and to say things, you know, to make arguments. And but personally, no, I haven't had a ton of pushback. I think part of it is about the way that the information is presented sometimes. I think for me, it's really important to make sure that I'm presenting information in a clear, concise way, but also in a way that's not alarmist, that these are facts, this is data, and this is a presentation of that data. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps. You know, it's education. We're trying to educate people about what's happening on a topic that a lot of people don't know much about. And that's okay. Not everyone is a meteorologist or a climatologist. And so I think that that's part of it. But I think also for me, a lot of times just day to day or week to week, mixing in climate information, just information about the climate, what things that we're seeing in Wisconsin or specifically in Southeast Wisconsin. And then when those opportunities arise or new data is presented about climate change, that people are already a little bit familiar with talking about climate. They already know that I talk about that, that that's a subject that we talk about on the news. And so that maybe that helps, you know, lead on this pathway.
A little bit more accessible, if you will. Tony now in Sturgeon Bay. Tony, hi.
Good morning. Thank you. During the global pandemic, carbon output globally, and check my numbers, only went down like maybe 5 or 6%. And subsequent to the pandemic, and now that we're in an endemic, where numbers are actually higher than they were prior to 2019. Do the guests feel that the global will to reduce carbon output, if it couldn't be thwarted during the pandemic, it's not going to now? And should we really be spending our money and efforts on living with a warmer Earth than versus trying to cool this one down?
Tony, thank you. I'm going to field that to Barbara Mays Bousted. You know, if we couldn't reduce our carbon footprint a lot in the pandemic, what will it take? And should we just adapt and live with it, Barbara?
I think that inevitably we're going to need to do all of those things because climate change driven by carbon dioxide doesn't stop as the emissions go down, not immediately anyway. So with continued carbon dioxide input into the atmosphere, that adds changes that are going to continue for generations, even if those emissions immediately stopped. So to some extent, we are going to be facing decisions about adaptation to climate change that is already baked into the system. Now, as far as the rest of that question, and should we just sort of give up? I don't know. I'm a pretty hopeful person. And I like to think that, you know, there are drivers for action, whatever that is, that's personal to people, that will create change down the line in some ways. But getting into that's a little beyond my professional expertise and more into my personal thoughts and feelings.
I wonder, do you fear, or is there a fear of controversy or complaints that would keep some meteorologists from talking about this type of data that can get very into the weeds very quickly?
That's an excellent question. I think meteorologists are getting more and more comfortable with talking about the data about climate change, the reports that come out, the peer-reviewed information, the National Climate Assessment, for example, all of these trusted sources that collect information about the science of climate change. When we start to talk about what as a society we should do about it, I think a lot of meteorologists get outside of their expertise and comfort zones and become more reluctant to talk about it for good, understandable reasons, too. Mm-hmm. We may not be as fully informed, or we may be aware that we have personal biases that affect our ability to communicate about these things. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yes, I think to answer your question, there's going to be a more of a hesitation when we start talking about solution sides as opposed to the science and evidence.
Barbara Mays-Bousted, meteorologist and climatologist at the National Weather Service, meteorologist in Madison, Milwaukee, Bob Lindmeyer and Kristen Kershane with us. Share your observations, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore how weather forecasters are tackling climate change and how meteorologists may have a platform in their local markets to bring people together on a divisive issue. Be part of this conversation by calling in with your questions about climate change and weather reporting. Share how your local meteorologist references climate change or talks about extreme storms. 800-642-1234. We have Barbara Mays-Bousted, a meteorologist and climatologist at the National Weather Service. Bob Lindmeyer and Kristen Kershane are meteorologists at TV stations in Madison and Milwaukee. They stay with us. We heard from Connie in Sun Prairie, who is trying to understand the language you use and the shift from talking about global warming through the years to now talking about climate change. Kristen, what do you make of language and what Connie is asking about the change in language on climate?
Yeah, I think that's somewhat important. And a lot of times those terms are used kind of interchangeably. I guess when we talk about global warming, you know, you're talking about a warming planet, which we certainly have. But not every change that occurs in climate is necessarily warming. So when you say climate change, that can encompass a kind of broader range of changes that happen. And I think, for example, in Wisconsin, if we look here specifically, that we are seeing climate change. But we're seeing that in a lot of different ways. Are we seeing warming? Yes, we can see that in the new data that's come out, that we're seeing temperatures warm. But we're also seeing some months becoming drier during the summer and in early winter. We're actually seeing more snow in February. So we're just seeing different types of changes, and that those aren't necessarily all warming. It's not just the one thing that we're talking about, that there's a lot of different things that happen and different effects when we talk about the changing climate. And so I think, to me, that's kind of the difference in those terms. But a lot of times they're just used rather interchangeably.
Bob, you know, meteorologists sometimes use the colorful language when talking about the weather, the polar vortex, the bomb cyclone, the mega drought. How does language affect climate change and how people consider it?
It's very important on how you message. You don't want to sound alarmist, so you have to pick your words carefully. You want to sound, you're a scientist, and you're just passing on peer-reviewed scientific information. So you don't need to emphasize anything out of the ordinary, because the climate science information is there and does it for you. So all you have to do, basically, is talk about what the climate scientists are saying, and you don't have to emphasize it any more than the language of the climate scientists already.
Barbara, what comes up for you about language?
A couple of things have come up for me. On one thread, I kind of chuckle a little when these terms like bomb cyclone and polar vortex get caught up in a media cycle and get attention, because these are terms that have been around the meteorology community for decades. And I think slowly, bit by bit, we're unpeeling the layers and discovering that meteorologists are kind of a funny and maybe nerdy group who use funny names for some of the things we've studied through the years without realizing, when they get into a public news cycle, the kind of attention that those silly names can draw. But a little more seriously, as Bob said, and as Kristen talked about too, you know, the language we use is really important for conveying things appropriately. And not just the words, but the context we put them in. I think the broadcasters especially understand this, the meteorologists who go on the air every day to talk. But in the Weather Service, we too are learning that if you go out and just list a bunch of facts to people, what you're talking about becomes not very interesting. What compels people and what gets people's attention is the story that comes around it. Mm. So there's a balance to strike where if you literally just go on the air or in your social media posts and list some facts, it's just not terribly interesting and people aren't likely to see it and let it sink in. Wrapping these things into narratives and stories brings them to life and lets us get those science messages out when they are put together with the human interest that compels us to listen to them. Humans are wired to want to listen to stories. And so when we can talk about our climate change and weather concepts in the frame of stories, we have a better chance that they stick and that people will listen and respond to them.
Let's bring in Nate in Milwaukee. Nate, what would you like to bring up?
Hi, thank you for having me. The language point actually may make an additional point, because I was going to call both of I want to thank these guys, because usually when I watch the weather, they don't mention global warming, and an irony is that there's actually a couple good, easy places that they could be fit in if they wanted to make a part of the discussion, and that's where you say compare highs or compare the number of unusual days in a given month or year, like this one in the last year compared to what it was in the past.
So comparing highs versus in the past. Nate, you're a little bit hard to hear right now. What further can you add there?
For example, rainfall, if there's a drought or an unusually hard storm, and counting the number that we get this year compared to what we would have in the past. Also, I just wanted to add, because of a prior caller's comment, that it's not a choice between mitigating and preventing more global warming. Global warming is kind of like a slow motion car crash where the car is out of control, but the slower you can get it, the worse the crash is going to be. And if you think the only thing you can do is mitigate, the problem is that the mitigation you do today may be overcome later if you don't deal with what's causing the speeding up of the car.
Nate, thank you for that. Bob, what about comparisons and being able to illustrate climate change by past data, decades-old data?
Yeah, it's very important with climate scientists. What they need to do is put what's happening now in perspective. And I give a climate talk. I have a PowerPoint presentation that I've given numerous times out in the public. And that's what I start off with is the science. And I really go to the ice core samples that have been extracted from the glaciers in the Antarctic and in Greenland, showing how they have 800 years of climate record. And year by year from the air samples, the air bubbles within that ice, they have this 800 year pattern that they can show in terms of how carbon dioxide concentrations have changed and then spiked up dramatically. So yeah, putting what's happening now in its perspective is so important.
When you go out on those talks, you invariably may hear from Justin in Kenosha, who called in to say the climate data doesn't support what you're saying. And why should I believe these meteorologists? How do you have conversations in those types of questions?
Research has shown that there's about 9% of the public that will not, and I'm not putting Justin in this category, but there is 9% of the public that will not be swayed whatsoever. Whatever you say, they're in their silo of information and you're not going to sway them at all. So I understand that. And I don't get into long engaged discussions with that particular segment. I look at the other 91% of the public that's willing to engage in the science. As long as you're willing to listen to what I have to say and accept that it's peer-reviewed science, it should be able to sway you. But for some, they're not going to be swayed whatsoever. And I understand that.
Kristen, you've covered hurricanes in Florida. How do you approach covering major storms or extreme storms or disasters?
I mean, I think day to day, being a meteorologist, covering big storms is an exciting part of the job, honestly. When I worked in Florida, covering hurricanes was sort of like covering huge snowstorms that happen in the Midwest. As a meteorologist, you get kind of excited about those events. Are they scary? Are they life-threatening? At the same time, yes. And I covered a couple of different hurricanes living during my time in Florida. I think we all remember not too long ago, Hurricane Ian that hit Fort Myers, and that was the market I worked in. So that was absolutely just devastating and heartbreaking to see, having lived there. But, you know, I think when you're in the midst of a really huge weather event that's coming or bearing down on the place that you're forecasting for where you live, that's not always, at least in my experience, the time to talk about climate change. That probably, at least for me, that's not the right time. People need to know critical, important, life-saving information when it comes to those big storms. What can they do right now to protect themselves and protect their property? Now, when we talk about longer term, you know, what changes are we seeing, making those comparisons that was brought up to what's happened in the past? Are hurricanes becoming stronger? Are we seeing more active seasons? What changes are happening related to those big storms? And that's information that can be dug into and relayed, I think, kind of after the fact in a lot of cases.
Barbara, would you agree there that storms, when you're in the middle of an emergency like that, not an appropriate time for meteorologists to talk about climate change?
What Kristen talked about is how we train our staff, that in the heat of an event as it's unfolding, our most critical messages are safety, preparedness, and the forecast for what is coming. There is a time and a place, though, to talk about climate change and whether events like this may be becoming more common in a climate-changing world. Usually that would come a little bit later as we follow up on the event. But really, as meteorologists, it's our responsibility to make sure people are safe from those events first and foremost.
National Weather Service meteorologist instructor Barbara Mays-Bousted, along with TV station meteorologists Bob Lindmeyer and Kristen Kershane, they stay with us. Still time to talk about climate change and weather reporting. Call in with your questions about what you see in your local meteorologist. What has stuck with you? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the connections between weather and climate change. Do TV meteorologists have the local trust and credibility to influence people? Still time for your questions. Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Bob Lindmeyer is Senior Chief Meteorologist at WKOW-TV at the Madison Station since 1989. We have Kristen Kershane, who's a meteorologist at WTMJ-TV in Milwaukee, and Barbara Mays Bousted is a National Weather Service meteorologist and instructor in the Great Plains. Barbara, I want to circle back to some of the things that Bob said at the outset, you know, being short on time in the job. The show has constraints for how much time you have to deliver the weather. There are ratings. There could be pushback from management. How can meteorologists build trust with their audience members when you consider these challenges?
Certainly, there are a lot of challenges when it comes to communicating climate. And one way is a bit of internal work, and that is things like becoming familiar with the National Climate Assessment latest report, which focuses on specific sectors and regions of the country that might be of interest to you. And also taking advantage of some of that training on climate and climate change to become more comfortable in the language, because the more comfortable it is for a meteorologist to speak the language of climate, the more that they will be able to do that effectively and efficiently on the air. And it will boost their confidence and their ability to get it done a little more quickly too, when the language becomes easier to process in your own brain. But as far as those limitations go with time, you know, it does put up a barrier, but it isn't one that's insurmountable. And we see that with our media partners, and we see it internally in the Weather Service too, that we can take advantage of our outlets and opportunities to reach people, whether that's on the air or, for instance, going into communities. A lot of meteorologists go into communities to give talks to schools or train our storm spotters, for instance. And there's an opportunity there too to talk about climate as it's so strongly connected to weather, and really look at this as a spectrum of information that, you know, climate and weather are different specialties, but they are so closely connected that an invitation to talk about one is connected to talking about the other.
Kristen, I wonder, is it hard at all to set aside concerns about ratings when addressing climate change, or doesn't it enter your mind at this point?
Ratings, no, I don't. That's not something that I really think about on a day-to-day basis. You know, I go to work, put the forecast together, do a presentation. You know, my day-to-day, you know, focus is just on forecasting the weather for the most part. But I think in regards to climate change, I think a lot of the points that have been brought up are really important for meteorologists in general, taking that extra time set aside to learn more about climate. You know, leaning on trusted sources like the National Weather Service, like NASA, NOAA, that put out a lot of really, really good information. And, you know, I also like the point that Barbara brought up before about telling those stories, that sometimes a bunch of numbers can be a little bit overwhelming and maybe not that compelling. But working to tell those stories and working in local news, I think the advantage that we have is being able to localize those stories in a lot of ways. You know, talking to people who are affected by the changing climate, talking to, you know, farmers or people who are dealing with more frequent extreme heat events who maybe don't have air conditioning. I mean, there's a ton of different ways to talk about how climate is changing and the effects of that.
I'm going to have Bob jump in here. What influence do station managers have as gatekeepers as to how you relay, perhaps not at your station, but maybe other stations, how you relay the climate crisis?
They are literally the gatekeepers and have tremendous influence on what the broadcast meteorologist is able to say on air. And it depends on the station group. They're all over the place in terms of some station groups. And again, most TV stations are part of larger groups. Some completely discourage it. They don't want you speaking about climate change at all. Luckily, those groups are in the minority. Most TV stations, I believe, are supportive and allow the meteorologists to talk about climate change. For some, it's just a little bit. For some, like I can talk a lot about it. They leave it up to my judgment. But yes, station management has a big influence on what the broadcast meteorologists can say.
Talking about weather and climate change with three meteorologists, Bob Lindmeyer there at WKOW-TV in Madison, Kristen Kershane at WTMJ in Milwaukee, and we have Barbara Mays Bousted at the National Weather Service. Barbara, what advice do you have for a new generation of meteorologists and how they navigate these issues?
I am being a trainer at heart. I think it's always going to come back to me about building your foundation of knowledge and expertise. Any meteorologist who's coming into our profession now is coming in knowing that climate and climate change are underlying everything that's going on in our weather. And it's really important to build up some baseline knowledge about that climate and how it impacts our weather patterns and some of our extreme weather events. So it comes back to finding those resources and staying up to date too, because this is an evolving field and information is emerging every year with new knowledge, new scientific background on how climate is impacting different systems.
Do you find it a challenge to keep up to date yourself?
I think I find that challenge across everything in weather and climate. There's such a volume of excellent information coming out that it requires work to identify what's going to be most relevant and keep up with it. It's well worth the investment, though.
Kristen, what about you? Is it hard to keep up to date on not only what is happening in meteorology, but also keeping an eye on the latest climate science?
Yeah, there's just so much information available now. You could spend your entire workday just looking at new information that's coming out, but you know, you might have 20 or 30 minutes here or there to take in some information like that. I think for me, one of the things that's been personally helpful is attending conferences that are put on by the American Meteorological Society or the National Weather Association. And there are different conferences that happen all the time. And those are really excellent places I found to get caught up, take a couple of days to set aside and really do some deep learning about new information, what's available.
Bob, Kristen, and Barbara, thank you all for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you. It was fun.
Barbara Mays Bousted, meteorologist and instructor for the National Weather Service. Bob Lindmeyer, senior chief meteorologist at WKOW-TV in Madison. And Kristen Kershane is a meteorologist with WTMJ-TV in Milwaukee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.